Welcome, friends, to the Someone Gets Me podcast. I am your host, Diane Allen, and I am so delighted that you're here. This podcast was created because I believe there is a visionary leader inside each one of us who is waiting to be seen. In each episode of Someone Gets Me, you will hear useful tips from successful visionaries who will share their stories about how being seen has allowed them to take their vision out into the world with action.
Hi, friends. It's Diane here with a great episode of Someone Gets Me. I have with me right now Sharon Rose. She's in Colorado and I'm in Florida, and the magic of the internet allows us to hang out together. Sharon has enough experience about some of the most amazing things that I don't even really know where to start her interview other than to welcome her. She is a filmmaker and a choreographer. She's an author. She is an amazing person with energy and healing, and she was trained in ballet. Check it out. It's like all these really amazing movement-oriented healing practices that all have woven together for her. And you know, that's how gifted people are, right? At 50 is when our brains harmonize and all of these great experiences come together into something magical and amazing. So I'm so excited to have Sharon on the show with us today, and we're going to see where it goes. So welcome, Sharon.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Diane.
This is going to be so fun. So I want to start a little bit with, tell us about what growing up was like. Like, where did you live? What were the beginnings of your life? Like, you were trained in ballet and opera and theater. Like, those are all really highly cultural and things. And so what was all of that like for you?
Well, I grew up in a middle-class Jewish family in Baltimore. My mother, who had gone to college at 14 years old, a very bright woman, she also was a dancer. Jewish families, like what I found out later, Hindu families, really love to train their children in the arts. So the minute I could walk, which was at 9 months, she started teaching me these like little song and dances. And when I was three, she sent me to ballet. Then when I was five, she sent me to singing lessons. And at that point, I started performing. And it's really interesting because where I am now, I was performing for people in hospitals and nursing homes and, you know, community organizations to bring joy and upliftment to people who really needed that, who were in, you know, some kind of difficult situation, illness, etc. Then at 9 years old, I started acting lessons. See, my mother's dream for me was to go to Broadway. Oh. And I was also very fortunate in that my father had a supermarket business. So he could, you know, my mother didn't have to work. And she could, in the Jewish tradition, schlep me to different, all these classes, you know, 3-4 times a week. So I'm very grateful for that, because I was a very, very emotional, passionate child. And these teachings, these trainings, gave me a medium through which I could really express these emotions and turn into fairies and, you know, all kinds of different balletic creatures, which later became very useful when I encountered North Indian classical dance, where I became turned into goddesses and demons and gods and all kinds of creatures. So later on, when I was given these fellowships to go to India from our wonderful US government, who really appreciated artists, which is amazing, I was able to use all that knowledge I'd gotten in childhood and apply it. It was like spiritual Broadway.
Wow.
So also the other thing from my childhood that I feel is very important is that my father's supermarkets were all in African-American neighborhoods. And so I grew up immersed also in that culture and that music. And I think that really opened me up to what I've become, and the work I've done in my life is to really, you know, see the beauty and gifts in every human being and do my best to assist them in bringing those gifts forth.
Oh, that's amazing. So, you know, my mother was a concert pianist, and we were exposed to, I wasn't in the same lesson kind of situation because I was racing sailboats and we were athletes, but we had the opera and we went and we appreciated theater and all of those things. And we were immersed in culture. And I think it's really paid off for me in my life because of the diversity. I've like soaked in everything I could get from any tradition, from any group of people. It was also welcomed instead of so shunned. And it sounds like you had a kind of a similar experience in that, the welcoming of all the different traditions. That's just so fun to meet somebody who also has that experience.
Well, it's been my focus of my whole life. I've gone deep into, I'm a scholar. So one of my grants to India was a Fulbright Senior Research Fellowship. I've been a scholar, not only of ancient Indian tradition, but I walked into and met my Tibetan teacher in 1985. So I went deep into the Tibetan tradition, into ancient Egyptian. In fact, in the ancient Egyptian, I have reconstructed the music, dance, and ritual from the temples of Egypt. So we do these workshops where we are actually singing the hieroglyphs and doing rituals for, you know, bringing protection, bringing in what's called in Egypt the Sa and Ankh, the magical elixir of life, purifying the heart, purifying the subtle bodies. And it's all very, very deep and celebratory. I've also looked into shamanism and Kabbalah, and most recently, for the last 3 years, I've been fully immersed in Qigong, Tai Chi, martial arts, Taoism. So the Taoist teachings, because I feel that they are incredible teachings for empowering, self-empowerment, and self-healing.
Well, I have some friends of mine who practice a lot of Qigong, so I have a lot of questions about that coming up. I would like to know how, as you were learning things like shamanism and Kabbalah and immersing yourself not only in an I'm just interested, but in a scholarly way, did you see any major themes that run common through all of these different traditions that maybe the average person listening would think, well, why all those different things? You know, what could be common about it? And I think there's probably a lot of commonality. So what's your experience with that?
I would say the first thing is real love of nature. Every one of these traditions has a real love of nature. And also, I would say they all, at their highest, lead you back to your true essence and teach you how to discover that grace and beauty in yourself. There, symbolically, it's very interesting because when I met my husband, Jay Widener, he had been immersed in Western alchemy. So that's the traditions of Europe, the alchemical traditions of Europe, and of the source, which was Egypt. Well, we could take it back even further to what we call the primordial tradition, where all of these teachings come from. But he had been immersed in Western alchemy, and I had been immersed in the alchemy of India and Tibet. And so when we met, what was so exciting was that we spent all these hours discussing the similarities of the symbols, of what you found in the painting. For example, you know, if you look at Egyptian paintings, you'll see, so Isis, you know, or many of them, they have a serpent on their head. If you look at, if you know Indian and Tibetan, you know, the Eastern, that serpent is the Kundalini serpent rising in the body. In, you know, the Hindu tradition, and many of them, the lotus flower, which is shown kind of as a mudra like this. In the Egyptian, it looks like this. So, and that symbol represents very similar to what we're going through today, that this beauty, this enlightened state arises from the muck. And we are certainly these days in the muck, praying and doing all the work we can to bring that out and have that lotus flower of healing and grace and beauty arise for us all.
Oh, that's beautiful. Those those common deep threads are like part of that core essence, you know, of, and how they all just bring us back to that, that amazing space. I think that's just, I've been intuiting that for many years before I really weighed when I was a lot younger. And I keep seeing it more and more and more unfold. And so it's so fascinating to have that kind of confirmed and remind everybody that there are these core essences that are going on. It's this one essence, and then the expressions are the same but different, but they have the same meaning. It's so, so powerful to me to be able to meander through the different worldviews and things like that and still have that deeper connection.
Well, work I've done a lot of work in different cultures. Mm. I've done a lot of work in schools. Particularly, I was dance and music partner, Ramzi El Edlebi, from Lebanon. He was a Sufi. And we went to thousands and thousands of schools in New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, and Virginia over about 6 years, bringing the beauty of all these cultures. So we would do music and dance with them, or, you know, have a show in which they would at times participate from 12 cultures. Oh. And if the school had a predominant culture that we didn't have a dance sport, we create one. So what I found in that work, which was just very heartwarming, was that there is so, through the arts, one is able to transmit deep spiritual teachings and to bring, you know, to introduce the beauty of these other cultures and show the similarities and show the differences. And so that work was just very, very lovely. We changed lives. The kids, they were just so open. You know, they're just like little open books. And this all went all the way from kindergarten to college. And we were like brought into a school to take over every class for, you know, once a week for a semester. And each class, each grade, a different culture. And so I would introduce it by having them sit in a circle and we do some meditative breathing. And then I'd lead them on this journey. I'd have them close their eyes and lead them on this journey into the culture. And then I would have them draw what they saw. And so then they always had something to take home with them. And then the parents would come in and have them costumes. And the teachers would be, you know, reading them myths and stories from that culture. And at the end, we'd have a big performance. And I felt like there were miracles that happened. A young girl, she was a little chubby in the fourth grade. Her parents had divorced and her mother was gay and had another, you know, had a female lover. And she felt ostracized because of her weight and because, you know, she was in an unusual situation. Well, in her grade, they did Hawaii. So I walked in, I saw her, you know, I have all this training in kind of reading people, and I saw what was going on. And the first thing I said, we're going into Hawaii. And see this girl here? She would be the most beautiful girl, according to the Hawaiians. And this girl was so happy that she became the star of her performance. And I gave her like a little video to continue. And so through the arts, you know, can not only, what was exciting for me was that I was able to bring in meditative practices, things that would, you know, kind of calm them down, but they were in the context of a story. So in a certain sense, we were able to get away with things that you at that point were not bringing into the schools. And it was a great time.
Oh, that's so magical. Just listening to you talk about it, so magical. You probably have so many amazing memories, not only about that little girl, but all different kinds of experiences. So was there ever a time that you got an aha or learned something or had an epiphany, a personal one, while you were in the middle of doing a performance or leading a performance somewhere else? Like you had your own internal like, whoa, kind of thing. Probably a lot of them. That's a trick question.
A lot of them. I have to say, when I was performing the story of Durga, Durga is the great goddess of power and beauty. And I had this 45-minute performance that I would do the whole story, play all the characters, my musicians would be there. And I was doing this for probably 1,000 people from India in New Jersey. And what I found, which was so interesting, and in what they said to me afterwards, number one, that I was really bringing forth what would be the essence of these Hindu teachings and their performances, which was that through the vehicle of the performance, both the performers and the audience are lifted and enter into these much more luminous realms, higher frequencies of the gods. So I felt it. I mean, they knew I was in their tradition, right? And I was giving to them, I was feeding them back, which is something I love to do in all traditions. I've done it a lot. I go deep in and embody because I have that training. And then, you know, through the lens of, you know, this time and this world and my experience, I'm able to, you know, feed them back their own tradition. And always with me, I'm in love with those traditions. And so they start to see it in a new way. I found with the people from India, often they would come up and say, "Whoa, you know, you've really brought me to a whole new level of my own tradition." And for that, I have to say, I'm really especially grateful for my teacher, my Guruji, Sitara Devi. I was so fortunate in having fellowship from the U.S. government so that I could go. She had been an early Bollywood star. She was called the Queen of Kathak, North Indian dance, when she was 12 years old. She was, you know, one of the main dance stars of India, but she also was very steeped in the spiritual tantric tradition. And I lived with her, so I had the teachings one-to-one, direct. I mean, we spent 8 hours a day or more. First, she was teaching me all these dances and stories. It was funny, when I first went there, I'd been a modern dancer. I mean, I'd been doing Indian dance and learning it for, let's see, about 5 years before I went to India. But, you know, I come there and I was still kind of a modern dancer. And she says, oh, listen, the first thing we have to do is give all your clothes away. So, and you can only dress in a sari, because if you're going to embody Indian goddesses, etc., you need to feel incredibly comfortable. Over time, I mean, what I learned from her has, what can I say? I'm just so grateful it changed my life. I mean, here's an example as an actress, right? In India, they have ancient, these are forms that go back thousands of years that were handed down from teacher to student. So there's a text called the Natya Shastra, in which it's the main text, ancient, on dance and music and theater. In that, there, it's taught 48 expressions of the eyes, each connected with a different emotional state. So for anyone in the world of dance or theater, this is like a treasure trove. Mm-hmm. So it was a challenging time too. I mean, I had lived in the U.S. I had seen poverty, but nothing like that. But I was also brought to the highest level through her, being with her and being her disciple, of the music, people like Shankar and Zakir Hussain. These are famous names, Ali Akbar Khan in Indian music. We were just hanging with them. So it was extraordinary. And also during that time, because I had these fellowships, I was able to, you know, be part of the international community there, the political community there, and, you know, meet artists and political people from all over the world. So it really was a powerful, powerful time in my life. And I want to tell you another story with this.
Yes.
Because this is really interesting. I was going, you know, I knew I was going there. I'd seen her picture. We'd had, you know, discussions a bit. But I had this experience where I was sitting on the point of overlooking the ocean, and all of a sudden everything shifted, and I was doing Indian dance. Well, this was way before, actually, this was before then. This was very early. This was 78. And it seemed, I saw in front of me this deity, glowing male deity, glowing in the sky, who later I realized was Shiva. And I started doing spontaneously Indian dance, which I had never seen really. I'd seen a little, but I'd never been trained. So that was really extraordinary. And from that time, it seemed that I kept meeting people that just, it was like that path just opened up. I mean, here's this like Jewish girl from Baltimore trained to go to Broadway, ends up in the highest levels of Indian classical art.
That is, I have goosebumps. It's like this surreal journey. And I'm just so grateful that you were so open to it and you kept saying yes along the way to have that amazing experience and then to bring that energy here, you know, to everybody that you touch into this interview and everybody listening to us and just everybody that comes in your presence. Because I have goosebumps listening to that. I can just imagine it. And I'm like, who would think this little Jewish girl in Baltimore is going to be doing Indian dance in the highest form, not just playing around in a real way, you know? That is just amazing. I love it. So how did you get from the Indian theme and everything, and then what happened to transition you to the Qigong and the Tao and all of that? And like that, I mean, because that's an interesting transition. And so I'm sure there's a story there. How did that happen?
Oh, well, so the Indian really started in 78, and I had many, many years. That was like the basis of my life. Let's see, until about 95. But at the same time, that's when I'd met my husband. We started our film company, Sacred Mysteries, 20 years ago now. And so with that, we really started looking into many different cultures. We made films on that took place in Peru and other cultures. We still did things on Indian music and yoga, and we looked at death and the afterlife from many different perspectives. Let's see, Qigong. Well, also during that, I think in about 92, I started studying healing. I trained in craniosacral therapy. I trained with another one of these extraordinary one-to-one teachings with a man named Robert Masters, whose wife is very well known. Her name is Jean Houston. And Robert was an Egyptologist, but he was also an amazing healer and had integrated a number of well-known traditions such as Feldenkrais and hypnosis and psychotherapy to create what both of them brought forth, what's called the psychophysical method of neurosensory reeducation. So with him, I worked one-to-one again and learned this system. Also, we went deep, deep into ancient Egypt. We would do these trances together, where we would both be speaking. It was very unusual. And we would travel in our minds to the temples of Egypt or the temples in Hawaii or India or all these places and interact with these beings. It was incredible.
Wow.
So coming out of that, I mean, I'm still all the time. I mean, I started in film, in video in 78 and did a lot of music videos and a lot of what they call like performance art, where it would be dance, music, theater, and video. So all that had been pouring forth. And then Jay and I made our first feature film, my husband, Jay Widener. And that was, let's see, we started in 2010. It was called The Last Avatar. And it brought forth it was about the last avatar of this Hindu god Vishnu, who comes to help everyone in this time period. And we had Neil Donald Walsh playing the Count Saint Germain, the great alchemist. and gave a teaching in it about what we call the light body, that we are so much more than we have been led to believe, that we have these energy, we have our emotions beyond the physical body. We have the emotional body, we have the mental body, we have the spiritual body, etc. And we had special effects, like if you've seen the work of Alex Gray, who we did a video with early on, that shows these energy fields.
Right.
And it was, to me, an introduction in a to these teachings from a very pretty beginning perspective to reach out to everyone. And so I had been doing practice of these teachings. And these teachings are about, as I said, that we have these subtle bodies, and each culture, and we've been talking about the cultures, seems to have their own specific map. So in the Hindu, they would have the chakra system. And the Taoists, they have what's called the chi matrix. And I decided that I want to go do a documentary to introduce these concepts of the light body and the subtle bodies from many, many different traditions to, as we began this discussion, show people that we have these common symbols, we have these maps, and they're very similar. So I started that, and I knew that Grandmaster Mantak Chia is probably one of the most well-known Qigong masters in the world. He taught about this light body. So my publisher, I've written this book called The Path of the Priestess, a guidebook for awakening the divine feminine, published by Inner Traditions. So he had the same publisher. So they connected us, and I went to it was a Tai Chi Qigong medical conference to interview him. And that was at a place called Eastover in Western Massachusetts. And so the owner, this beautiful woman named Ying, said to me, "Well, you're here, you know, I've got 12 masters to interview them all." So I prepared for him. So I just went for it. I mean, that's what the Indian training, the dancing, it's emotional, it's spontaneous. So I just went for it. And I was so impressed. These teachers stood for an hour, stood in nature, and just transmitted this chi, this life force energy, this light, and their knowledge to me as I asked questions. And, you know, having been in deep into many of these traditions, meeting many of these masters and teachers, I was amazed at their level of health. I mean, they were, you know, my teacher now, his name is Master Li Junfeng. He's 81. And he's like 50. I mean, he moves like 30. And I knew there were some, because I'd been really involved in healing too. And I was just so impressed with Qigong and its ability to teach you how to heal yourself. And, you know, instead of like seven chakras or 12 chakras, it was only three basic centers. And three bodies. And I felt like, wow, this is just a tremendous teaching that could be of benefit to everyone, especially in these really disruptive, you know, crazy times where the media is just really bringing fear to us. And, you know what's going on. You all know what's going on. We can all feel it.
Right.
And I just felt that these teachings were an antidote and simple, you know, people of all ages, and particularly they've been really beneficial. Dr. Roger Yonka, who is now an associate producer on Quantum Chi, the series, he's worked with a veterans generation, with people with PD, he's worked with Kaiser Permanente, he's worked with, you know, this level with Qigong, bringing it to people to really help them heal. So I was really it seemed that this project just brought together everything I've learned in this life, from the filmmaking mm-hmm. to the dance and movement to the healing and to the different traditions and the symbols and all that. So it's just been, it's encompassed my life now for 3 years.
Oh, but it's amazing. And I'm so happy to hear that you're doing a documentary on it. And I have a question for you, a little bit about your personal process, because it's a question I get from a lot of listeners. And you're the perfect person that to bring it up with. What I hear from people a lot is, well, I did this career, or I did that thing, and I did this thing, and it's a waste. And now I'm over here, and I'm starting all over again, and I have to leave that behind. And I keep trying to say, well, you know, it all comes together, you know, that nothing goes to waste. And so what would you say to somebody who's listening to us, who's thinking, you know, I've had all these experiences and all these things, and I don't see how it's coming together. And they're just kind of feeling defeated by it, even though there's things going on and maybe they don't feel understood. Do you have any wisdom that you would want to share with those people?
Every experience you have is part of like your treasure box. Every experience, no matter, I'll give an example from my own life. So, you know, as I said, dance was my life. I mean, film too, but it was always dance. Let's see, when did this happen? My hips did going. I mean, genetically, but both my parents have hip replacements. And I was in pain. I kept doing all the exercises I knew for, I'd say, 7 years from when it started to keep myself functioning. I was limping, I was aching. And then I decided, what happened then was I was still teaching, but at that point, because I couldn't, you know, kick my legs and do any of that wild stuff, I started going deeper into the metaphysical aspects and creating, I mean, it was a real blessing, creating these dances and workshops, et cetera, for everyone. So it was, we were singing, we were doing simple movements, simple gestures, and, you know, coming together in this joyous dance experience. Then I had the hip replacements, and the performing sort of kind of went away. And at the same time, I've had all this knowledge. So look what's happened. Now here I am with Qigong, you know, filming these incredible masters. And Qigong also has brought me back to a level of grace in my movement and flow that I never thought I'd achieve again. So I took everything I've learned from these traditions and like just poured it into this new era of my life. And so to all of you, you know, there are gifts in everything you do and everything you learn. It's just that we live in this strange world where those gifts are not nurtured. And as I called the film series, it's called Quantum Qi, The Taoist Art of Nurturing Life. And really what we need to learn, which is very clear to me, particularly as a woman, is that we really need to understand how to first nurture ourselves and then be able to nurture each other from that very grounded, clear place of understanding that we are really, really more than we're being told. And every one of us, as I always say, you know, has these gifts, but because we are wounded, generally as children, you know, those gifts get blocked and we start to feel like, oh, I can never be this or I can never be that, or, but that's not true. It takes, you know, it takes courage and it takes a lot of discipline and commitment, but every experience you have is just another learning experience, which you can bring to whatever new job you have, whatever, you know, new relationship you have, etc.
Oh, that's beautiful. And so this movie, this documentary film that you've put together, is it out yet?
No, right now it is a crowdfunder. We started today. we have the pilot is pretty close to being done. We're working on the second episode, and you know, what can I say? I would say check out our website, quantumqimovie.com, quantumqimovie www.jewishfamily.com. There you'll find lots of gorgeous trailers. It's been really exciting because we started working to show these energy fields many years ago. And now through these new animation programs, we're not only able to show that, but we're able to show how energy affects, like if you're angry, how it would affect someone else. Because I believe that if we could, or if you're, you know, love, what that looks like energetically, I feel that if we could really understand and be able to open our higher sense perception, that things could really change. I was with a friend, Cindy Tate, the other day. We were talking about, you know, the issue of the day, climate change. And she said to me, yes, everyone's concerned about the physical climate, but what about the energetic climate? You know, if we could really learn to, you know, clear that and to, you know, bring a whole new understanding of our energy, what would that do? I bet that the physical climate would change as well.
Hallelujah. I'm so glad to hear that, because that's what I think. And that's what I tell everybody. It's all about healing our energy and healing our vibration so that it keeps rising and rising. And then the outpicturing of a higher vibration is a healthier body, a healthier life, a healthier planet, healthier relationships. Everything up levels as we up level our own energy. And so I'm going to make sure that there's links to your websites in the show notes so y'all can check those out, because this is an ongoing project and this way you can get the most up-to-date information.
Okay.
So what do you do to take care of you? Like you were talking about women learning how to take care of themselves, and you're a scholar and you do all of these amazing things. It's just absolutely stunning to me. And so I'm sure you have some self-care things that are very protected and dedicated in your life to be able to do what brings you forth. So maybe give everybody a little bit of an idea of what does Sharon do for Sharon's world?
I eat really good food, organic. We have a greenhouse in which we grow our own food, which is, I can't even tell you, when the first time I made pesto from the garden, you know, from our greenhouse, it was like drinking light. It was like eating light. I mean, I'd never tasted anything like that. So we'll start with, I have a good diet. You know, I do Qigong. And then all these different trainings that I've had, I've integrated into, you know, my own healing practice. So I try, like, depending how busy I am, but I try at least 5 days a week to spend a couple hours I go in and do these, I use dance exercises I taught in the 70s. I use Feldenkrais, which is this incredible system for bringing consciousness into the very tissues of the body, particularly working with the joints. I do my own version on myself of craniosacral, where I'm looking for what I call holding patterns, places of tension in the body, and using breath and consciousness to release them. Let's see. Yeah, yoga. Everything that I've been, meditation, definitely. And then, you know, I live in this extraordinary place called Crestone, Colorado, which was created by my dear friend Hannah Strong to house the world's religions. And so we have all these temples from the Tibetans to the Carmelites to the Hindus to the Shinto, all of this. So I'm living in an atmosphere of people who are committed to spiritual upliftment, and it's gorgeous here. It's very quiet, both energetically, because we don't have all our electricity and stuff is buried underground, and it's just a very unusual place. I was just out at a conference in Sacramento. I was like, oh my God, I wasn't used to being around in a city, you know, around so many people. But yeah, I live a very meditative life, and so the people around me. But I would say that to all of you out there, that Qigong really, really has so much to offer. because, you know, if you're waking up in the middle of the night, like many of us are these days, with anxiety, you know, there are teachings for you to deal with that right there, right then. You know, if you have issues with your liver, liver in that system is connected to anger. There are teachings, and they're amazing teachings, called the six healing sounds, in which you're bringing sound into your liver, and you're also doing these, your eyes are looking left and right into your organs. You're imagining in front of you anyone you have anger issues with, you're letting those go. You're deleting them. And that's for your major organs. Each one has a different emotion and a different transformative aspect. So these teachings are profound. I've been using them, and they're really wonderful for working with the emotions. And then just the grace of the flowing Qigong movements immediately puts me into the state of what's called flow, where, you know, those are one of the people in my film series, Lee Holden. He's a famous Qigong master, has been on PBS for years. He really loves to talk about flow. It's that experience when everything, if you're an athlete, like everything, you're in the zone. Everything is just flowing. You know, if you're in business, everything all of a sudden, everything's working out and it's just easy, right? That's what Qigong can bring to you. And so, you know, that I would say right now, because I'm so immersed in it, that it's kind of pervading all these other teachings as well.
Oh, that is great. I can't wait to watch the documentary series as it gets launched and everything. I work with a lot of people in recovery from substance abuse and some with mental illness as well. And a lot of the visionary leaders are prone to that sometimes because they're so sensory and put in so many things that anything that'll just give them a little bit of a break, not realizing the damage you're doing, they can seek out. So I help them kind of undo that mess. And Qigong's one of the things that I always try to say, give it a shot, you know, even though you might think it's weird or odd or, you know, it's not intellectual, so you can't figure it out, just go with it. And I hear a lot of really great results. So I'm definitely going to send them to your documentary as it comes forward, because that will really help them a lot.
Well, what's exciting is that because I'm such an experiential person, there's nothing like direct experience in your own physical body.
Yes.
So we have each episode, we'll have about 40 minutes of people describing, like episode one's about what is qi? What does it feel like? What is Qigong? What is the Qi matrix, this map I'm talking about of the subtle realms? And, you know, how is it connected with Taoism? And then the next 20 minutes are all exercises so that you can learn to feel Qi. You have a simple one, I'll do it for you, is you just clap your hands together and rub them. You can feel the heat. And then you bring the part in together and everyone can feel that. It's like a tingling. And that's the very beginning of starting to feel the qi. And then you can use that, you know, if your shoulder or, you know, your shoulder hurts, then you can just bring that energy right to that place and really just sit there and feel it sink in to your shoulder, right? So that's just it goes very deep. But that's what we're doing. So episode two is all about how Qigong is the foundational practice for all the martial arts. And then we go into something very important these days, protection, not only physical protection, but energetic protection. You know, how do we protect ourselves from all this chaos that we're living in? And so then there'll be exercises about that will lead people into an experience of how to protect themselves. So that's the vision of the whole thing.
Oh, that is a beautiful vision. It's also very necessary. So I have a related question, and it's a little bit divergent though. And I'm really curious to hear your views on women stepping into more leadership roles. I had a discussion recently at a conference I was at with a bunch of different women. And it's funny how they sought me out to talk about women in leadership. And I've thought about it more and more, and I'm listening to you, and clearly you're a pioneer and you're a seeker and all kinds of things. And there's also this role of women in leadership. And, you know, we've heard, I think it was a Dalai Lama said that women will be the new leaders, and it's all coming back around. And so what are your thoughts on women in leadership?
It's interesting you ask that, because for many years, especially when my hips were going, that was the other thing I was doing. I was teaching workshops for women. And I wrote my book in 2003, and I have an episode, I have a chapter, a couple chapters that really speak to these issues you're talking about. And, you know, what it was like for women in these ancient societies that I've studied, where, you know, women had their mysteries and men had their mysteries. And the women's had to do with healing and the mysteries of birth and death. But at the same time, in many of these traditions, women were the political leaders. And they would gather together, and this is an Aboriginal perspective, you know, also, where was this? In South America, in the shamans. And, you know, they were the keepers of what I call the psychic, energetic, emotional landscape of society. Because we're, I mean, it's the way it is. We're very sensitive that way. As mothers, you know, we feel the children in our womb. You know, we our fields expand during that time. We are the caretakers. And so, you know, the women would gather together and they would discuss what was going on in the tribe. And then depending on, you know, what they saw and what they felt, they would come up with remedies in order to bring the energy back to a place of harmony and balance, which actually is the essence of the Tao. So, you know, this was in 2003, I was looking across the landscape of society and I saw, especially, which is even more intense now, the pervasive and invasive influence of the media and the whole, the greed and the whole corporate power and the lack of nurturing. You know, it's what we were talking about just before, how, you know, people, it's not easy for them to find their true essence, to, you know, find that place from which they can flow. And so I spoke in that book about how young girls were being taught they had to look a certain way and they had to act a certain way and they all had to be real skinny and, you know, this and that. And I mean, young boys had their own issues. And then I talked about the medical realm. I mean, at that point, I knew people, women had gone into the corporate realm. And what happened was when they went in, I guess because they felt that they had to be tougher than men, you know, to assert themselves. They had to be stronger. And they became, what can I say? First of all, they became very tough. And they really didn't treat their sisters, their other female employees, very well. There was a lot of competition. And even, you know, they were just trying to, you know, bring forth their dominance in that situation. And I felt that that was completely the wrong thing to do. We are nurturers. And we should bring that nurturing ability as leaders into all aspects of life. It's not about screaming and calling people names and, you know, just saying horrible things about people. And I mean, I don't see where that's going at all, except to create just more and more divisiveness. So to me, you know, when I go out in the world, I'm not in politics. I'm not really interested too much. It's very disturbing. In fact, I've had to just turn it off because I just don't want that darkness invading me. But my message to anyone who's going out in the corporate or the political world, you know, thank you for doing it. And let's do it from our true essence and not from these trying to be some harder than men or, you know, more intense or, you know, do it with an open heart and find that open heart and be able to like look at every human being as a true human being and bring out the gifts rather than, you know, tell them they're horrible or they can't do this right or, you know, as a dance teacher, I would always go up to somebody and say, wow, the way you're pointing your foot is exquisite. Now, if you could just, you know, watch how I move my shoulder. If you could just get that grace that you have in your foot, in your shoulder, then, you know, it would be, you'd be magnificent. So it's like, why can't we bring the positive? And that's what I have to say to women leaders. You know, it's like, let's go. Everyone needs to be nurtured, especially now. Everyone wants to be hugged. You know, everyone wants to be cared for. So let's work together as women, as sisters, with our brothers, and find, you know, it's time to, in the book I wrote, you know, it's time for a revolution where we really, really come together and forget the victimhood and forget all the stuff that they're pushing at us and just find our true, beautiful nature and share it with everyone else.
Oh, that's beautiful. So that is a really powerful message for women, you know, to bring their heart center first. And coming from a nurturing place doesn't mean you're weak or wimpy. In fact, it actually means you're stronger, actually. And I've heard people say that, you know, when you lead with your heart and all of that, then you're a wimp. I'm like, no, actually, that's not the case. That's the fear from something jumping in there. So I'm glad to hear you say it that way. I like, yes, yes, I'm wanting to cheer you on. And you might want to rewind this and listen to what Sharon said a few times to remind you about exactly a cool way to lead as a woman and a man, actually.
Yeah, all of us.
So I could go on and talk to you forever, but I'm going to be considerate of your time. But I do have a couple more questions, if you don't mind. And one of them is, I know that you have a free gift for all my listeners. And yes. I'd like you to tell them a little bit about the free offer. Now, I'm going to put the link to it in the show notes for you. So you can just click on that link and grab it if you're interested. But I would like Sharon to explain to you what it is so that you can see if it's something you're interested in.
These are audio meditations. They lead you into an experience of feeling the chi, into feeling that center, into experiencing what does it feel like to experience bliss and joy and empathy. And so what can I say? They're from the work I've been doing all these years. It's a glimpse of it. And I just wanted people to have the ability to experience and just flow with the chi and feel that beautiful, energizing life force energy, you know, flowing through their whole body in this loving way.
Oh, that sounds like a beautiful gift. I know I'm going to be clicking on that link because I'm listening to you and hearing your voice and just connecting with your energy. And I'm so grateful that you've spent so much of your valuable time on this show and blessing all of us. So I have one last question for you. And that is, if there was a billboard we could create that the whole world is going to see and you're going to put the message on it, what would that message be?
Right now, I would say, heal yourself, heal the world.
Oh, beautiful. Very simple and very clean. Heal yourself and heal the world.
Because you can't, until you heal yourself, you really, you know, from that place, once you are even on the path of it and you start to feel, joy again, just even glimpses of it, you know, from that becomes like the beacon for you. It's like when you discover that true essence inside, that's your beacon. You don't need an outer teacher. I mean, they help you. Yes, they definitely help you, but it's all there. And so once you find that, you know, and then start to feel what it feels like to have the power to heal yourself from that place, then you can begin to use that knowledge, that personal deep experience to help other people.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. Thank you, Sharon, for being on the show with us today. It's so amazing to have you here. And maybe we'll have to do another show later.
I'd love to. I have some, the next thing I'm working also is this music I've written, which has the same message. So maybe we can talk about and play some of that sometime.
Oh, that would be amazing to have you play some of the beautiful music for us. Okay, we're going to have to do a second episode, everybody, because Sharon's just so amazing. So I want you to know, everybody, you have been listening to Sharon Rose from Colorado, and she has filled us with the most amazing gift of beauty and grace and education and flow and chi, all kinds of things. So if you've resonated with what Sharon has talked about, I'm sure you have, check out her website. The link will be in the show notes, and grab the free offer and really get to experience something that will change your life. I'm certain of it. And remember, everybody, that you are a rock star. So keep your face to the sun so the shadows fall behind you. Go after it. The world really needs your essence. So show up and make some noise. Until the next episode of Someone Gets Me, be well.
Thank you for listening. I trust you gained some valuable inspiration and information. Please join me and other visionaries in the Someone Gets Me Facebook group. Or for more information on my services and additional episodes, visit someonegetsme.com. Again, thanks for listening.